Hello, Tea Crew, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tea Talk with Sha. Today, we're going to be getting into all the topics all over social media and the internet, and we're also going to be doing a deep dive into Netflix's new documentary special, Lover, Stalker, Killer. You're not going to want to miss this episode. Stay tuned. All right, T-Crew, as per usual, it has been an eventful week and weekend, so let's get straight into the tea. I hope you all enjoyed the mini sips while I was away on my mini break last week, and, you know, the response has been really good, so thank you all for your opinions in the comments, especially on the Kelly Rowland situation. You guys have been going off in the comments, so thank you so much for that. But let's get into this long form episode. So the first topic here, Natalie Nung calls out Favio Foreign and clears up a story that he told on a recent podcast. So Favio Foreign has been pretty messy lately. He went on some podcast talking about Free Tory and how he doesn't believe Meg and all this stuff about being shot. And then he comes now to, I don't know if it's the same podcast, different podcast, and he talks about how one of his friends basically used his name for association to get involved with Natalie Nunn, and that now this person is having a relationship with Natalie Nunn where she's flying him all over the world, et cetera, et cetera. Now, Natalie had to quickly jump out there because, you know, Natalie has been married for a very long time. They have a child together, and she was like, oh no, I can't let this rumor fly. So she gets on her social media and she's like, you know, first of all, if you're going to tell the story, tell the entire story. So everyone was like, okay, you know, we're intrigued. And she basically went on to say that she hired Favio Foreign's friend to do some work with her because they had done a song together or they had worked together on music previously, and that, you know, she was going to be working on a tour. So for those that don't know her reality show, they actually do more than fighting, surprisingly, but they do. When they go to these different bookings, they also perform their music. So with Natalie having music out, she had this man come on their bookings to allegedly help her work with music and make sure her tracks were right and make sure everything was given to the DJ, you know, prior to them coming and all that stuff. So he was, I guess, a music manager, a road manager, or he had some type of job in her camp. She was like, he was not my boyfriend. I was not flying him around, you know, for him, like, just to be with me. Like, he really had a job function. And she's like, also, we don't have a relationship. So, I mean, that makes sense to me. I just don't understand why Favio Foreign needs to be so messy in podcasts lately. It's just like, the music's not doing what he thought it would do, so now he's just going to be a podcast guy and, like, hop on there and try to spill the tea and go viral. Like, you knew this was going to go viral, so you're just trying to go viral off of little tidbits that you've heard here and there, don't even have the full story. It's like, all right, now everybody wants to be a blogger. Everybody wants to be on a tea podcast. Can y'all leave some tea for us? Jeez. All right. Let's get into this next story here. This was crazy in the Bravo universe. Simon Gabadia is accused of scamming in his younger years and will not be getting his U.S. citizenship at this time. So basically, Simon has been petitioning the U.S. government for citizenship. He has currently a permanent status in the U.S. And this is all alleged because, first of all, this is a very complex immigration issue. And even with, you know, my little law experience, my little background in law, I was not able to really fully understand, but I'll give you guys what I understood of the situation. And as always, if you want more context or more information, look it up yourself, do your own research. I am a one-person team, and sometimes the details will be incorrect. So you need to go and do your own research. This is not like ABC, CNN, you know, well, nowadays. Anyway, so what I understood of the situation is that at this time, Simon will not be naturalized as a citizen, even though he has been in the country for a very long time, I think since the 90s. And the issue that he's having is that he would, you know, allegedly, according to the government and the paperwork, he was creating identities. And these identities were getting work visas and permanent work status in America, but they were not Simon's true identity. So he did this like one or two times. And then the government was like, okay, you know, you've been in the country off of these aliases, basically, but we're not going to give you citizenship because you've been making up these aliases, if that makes sense. So now Simon is working to become naturalized because he has been in the country for so long. He's been contributing, he's been making businesses, he's been able to do all these things. Now, the interesting part for Bravo fans is the fact that because Simon never really had legitimate legal status in the United States, they're saying that his marriages may not be legitimate. And I'm like, oh my God, what does that mean for Portia? What does that mean for Fallon? Like, what does that mean for any of them? But if you guys remember, Simon and Fallon's divorce wrapped up very quickly. And I think a lot of us assumed it was because of the situation with Portia, but it may have just been because of his status and his immigration was not right that Fallon was able to walk into the divorce room, get everything she wanted, and walk out because he didn't have a leg to stand on without, you know, being exposed on this immigration tip. You know what I'm saying? So this is just getting to be very crazy, very messy. For those that are super interested, I would recommend looking through the legal documents. I think Hollywood Unlocked posted them yesterday. Possibly the Neighborhood Hawk posted them because that's where you can read through the actual legal documents and like see everything that went on in his past, why they really are trying to figure out a way to naturalize him as a citizen, but they need his real information. And I don't think the US government has it. And then yesterday, Simon was posting some videos about being unbothered and talking about he's not a scammer. And, you know, I was just like, is this Portia's storyline or is this a real situation? Because I'm like, if this is a real situation and they know you've been in the country illegally for all these years, like, is Simon gonna get deported? Is Portia gonna have to really be like over there, you know, having to move to Nigeria and like really be a real housewife of Nigeria, not Atlanta? Like, what is going on? That Portia on Young, Famous, and African, though, can we get into it? Oh my God, could you imagine? Now that somebody pay me producer credit, Portia going to Young, Famous, and African, boom. Boom. That's all I can say because I know she would eat Annie up. No offense. We love the whole entire cast over there. I know she would eat Annie up. All right. Let's get into this next topic here. Tiffany Red, who is a songwriter to the stars, calls out Beyonce, Tamar, Zendaya, and Seven Streeter for publishing credits where she claimed she wrote the entire song. And the stars took publishing that they were not entitled to. These are her claims. Now, before I even get into this story, I want to say Tiffany Red is also the friend of Cassie, who was writing for Cassie, that came out a couple weeks after Cassie's lawsuit to confirm what she saw at Cassie's birthday party. So, for those that remember that situation, there was a friend of Cassie's who witnessed Cassie being at a birthday party after had temporarily leaving Diddy. And at this birthday party, she claims that, you know, Diddy came and like scooped her up, told her to pack a bag for a week, that she was going back, et cetera, et cetera, and that she didn't want to go back and the whole thing. So I don't know if you guys remember that, but if you don't, go back to my podcast about that topic and I do get further into it. But this is the same songwriter. So just keep that in mind. Tuck that in your back pocket for now. So she is coming out specifically against some of our faves. And what she's saying is the songs that she wrote for them, she wrote them in writer camps, which is basically when writers, producers, music executives get together and they write a bunch of songs that might be good for certain artists. And then when that artist is
ready to pick from these songs. They kind of go in, you know, and just pick the songs that they want to do for their album. This really pushes the album creating process and makes it a lot faster versus, you know, them having so many different things that are not targeted towards them and they have to pick something. When you have an artist camp, they know what the artist sounds like, they know what the artist has previously recorded, who they've worked with, what's been a hit for them, and they just go and write with them in mind. So she's claiming that a lot of these hits came out of writer camps where the celebrity, you know, singers and performers were nowhere near the camp. So how could they have publishing credits? And, you know, I think she makes a good point, but I also want to make it known that she's not getting nothing. Like, she hasn't not received publishing on these records. She receives publishing on the records. What she's upset about is that she's not receiving the full publishing on the records because she feels like she did 100% of the writing. She should get 100% of the writing credit. Now, my only thing with Tiffany calling out the celebrities is because I feel like you call it the celebrities, you get on the blogs, right? That's how I found out about it. That's how most people will talk about it as the days go on. So you get in the blogs for calling out the celebrities, but it's like, why do you work with these producers and these labels and these executives that are not giving you your proper publishing? A lot of these artists don't own their masters, and specifically for the songs that they get from writers camps and development camps and these whole things, like, this usually belongs to 1,000% the labels. And I'm not saying she shouldn't get what she deserves. I think she should get what she deserves. But it's like, you're working with these labels that represent these big names. And it seems like you've been doing that for a very long time. And I understand you want what you want. You want your due. You've gone to, like she said in her clip, she went to all the major songwriting people. She's gone to them. She's gone to the labels. She's gone to, you know, everyone who's in control of songwriting. And they haven't been able to help her. So my thing is, calling out the celebrities will get you to possibly go viral. Like, I think she'll go viral off of this story. So I think that'll get you to go viral. But if they don't own their own masters and everything that goes into who divides the publishing, it's not going to get you the publishing. Like, screaming into the ether that Beyonce owes you money is not going to get you money from Beyonce. You know what I mean? And it's not to say she doesn't deserve it, but it's just to say, I don't know if this is going to give her the results, or it's just going to give her visibility, or maybe she's just going for visibility at this point. But I just feel like, you know, if you're working with somebody, anybody in industry, and they're not giving you the fair amount of publishing that you're due, I just don't think you should work with them again. I think you should try to get what you're owed, but I definitely don't think you should continue to work with people who are not giving you proper publishing. That's my thought on the situation. I would love to know what you guys think about that. Do you think it was a clout chase? Do you trust her? Because she seems to pop up a lot when there's drama or situations going on. She seems to be the one to kind of pop up in those situations. Like, so do you think she's credible? Like, what do you guys think about these situations? Also, I did notice in her clip, to be very fair, she did not mention the song that she did with Beyonce. She mentioned Zendaya's song, Tamar's song, Seventh Streeter, but she didn't mention specifically the song that she did with Beyonce, but she says on Renaissance. So I was like, what song is it? Why didn't you say it? You know what I mean? I feel like there's more there. So possibly more will come out if she goes live again, or this might be it for her. Maybe somebody sees the clip and they reach out to her and compensate her because they don't want her spilling more tea. I don't know. All right, let's get into this next topic here. So Usher was on The Breakfast Club and he had a few things to get off his chest about his past performances as well as his performance for the Super Bowl. So there has been a viral clip going around of Usher performing with Nicki Minaj. They're in the white outfits. I don't remember what award show it was. And, you know, Nicki is like dancing and Usher kind of playfully like slaps her butt. But you can see in the video when Nicki reacts that she was not expecting that. It wasn't something that was rehearsed. You know, Usher kind of just got in his Usher bag and just started slapping butts. So He apologizes for this moment on the Breakfast Club. He was like, you know, I was really into it. I should never have done it. You know, it's embarrassing for me when I see it now because I know that I shouldn't have, you know, disrespected her in that way. It was not part of the performance and I did it anyway type thing. So he apologized to Nikki for that. And then he said the My Boo hug was completely innocent, that he's performed with Alicia so many times that they're actually good friends. And he was just, you know, excited in the moment of his performance. Listen, Usher is a performer and he's going to sell the performance. Now the whole thing with Nikki, I do agree that he needed to apologize for that because you could just tell her reaction after the slap that she was not expecting that. And it was kind of unneeded. You know, they had like a little bump, you know, when you bump your hips together, like that was part of the performance, but then he kind of got low and slapped her butt. And she was like, what are you doing? Like, this is not even what we rehearsed. Like, can we like stick to the program here? So that is unprofessional. And I'm glad that he cleared that up because, you know, a lot of people could take that as unwanted touching. And we know how much unwanted touching is getting these celebrities in trouble these days. So it's like, that's something you definitely don't want to play with. For the Alicia Keys thing, I really feel like it was just part of the performance. You know, I think in that music video that they had Boy back in the day, they were also hugging and stuff like that. So I think it was just like a call back to the performance. Yes, she's married. A lot of these people be married. You know what I'm saying? Like Jennifer Lopez is married. She gets up there and dances all on the dancers and they dance all on her. And then she goes home to Ben Affleck. Like, this is a performance, people. It's not real life. Him hugging her and singing to her. You know, he's honestly, to me, I'm gonna be honest with you, because you guys know I keep it 1,000%. I wouldn't have wanted that hug. Usher was very sweaty. Usher is 45 years old and he was up there giving it his all, as he should, as he should. You guys know I really enjoyed his Super Bowl performance. It wasn't one of the top topics that you wanted to talk about, so I didn't really get into it that deeply, but I really enjoyed the performance. I thought he gave it. And you know what else, y'all? It was so black. It was black. It was black. You hear me? It was, you don't have to call, caught up, superstar. It's like, he was like, yeah, I'm on the world stage, but I'm going to do it for my fans. And his core fan base is black women. So I really feel like he did it for us that night. I can't lie. I feel like he really did it for us. I was happy with the performance. I was actually in Puerto Rico during the Super Bowl and I was on my feet dancing and everybody was kind of dancing, but I felt like he was singing to me. You know what I'm saying? I felt like he was really singing to me. So shout out to Usher for that. But yeah, you know, you get into the performance. This is not real life. Obviously, when you get off the stage and the lights come down, if you have to make apologies for your behavior because you were just so into it or whatever, you know, you got to respect people's boundaries even when you're performing. But that hug looked like it was sweaty and nasty, you know what I mean? And that she was just going along with it for the sake of the performance. I don't think anybody wants a sweaty man just clinging, bear hugging them from the back. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, she probably just going with it because she knew this is what the song called for. It's a love song about two people that have been in love for a very long time. And, you know, she's just going with it. Swiss Beats was fine with it. I mean, how could he be mad? Let's not even get into that. Let's not even get into the Swiss Beats of it all because I can't. Because I truly can't. Let's go into this last topic here. Benzino was on Drink Champs, y'all. And, you know, he had one too many shots. He's in the Drink Champs chair. And he just starts going off. You know, he just starts going off. I will say the first time I watched this clip in the beginning, I was like, wow, they need to cut the liquor. Because it's just kind of like he's crying and he's ranting and he's not really saying anything. But then towards the end of the clip, you really hear him start to say some real stuff. So let's get into like a little bit of what he said. So he talks about Eminem and he talks about his beef with Eminem. So for those that don't know, Benzino used to have a magazine called The Source. And The Source was a hip hop giant for those that just were not there. Like, I was there. I remember The Source had an award show. They also had like compilation albums that I used to love because it was like all the hot tracks that were out, I guess, that quarter, or I don't know. It was kind of like That's What I Call Music, but for hip hop. And they had all these songs on there. But the great part about it is that the songs were edited. So, you know, a lot of the church kids, you guys know, grew up in a church. We couldn't get the individual like albums because they usually were explicit. And obviously it's hard to sell our parents on that because you can see clearly from the cover that it's a rap album. When the Source came out with the mixtapes, like with all the different songs that were hot that quarter, it just had the Source on it. It was like the Source, you know, I don't know what it was called, like the Source Collection or something like that. But it was edited and it was just like, it just looked like a That's What I Call Music, but for hip hop. So it was like easier for us to get that in the cart. You know what I'm saying? Little tangent, but I think y'all feel me. So the Source was a big deal. It really was. So he talks about his beef with Eminem and how Eminem beefed with the Source. And him specifically about not critiquing his albums the way that he felt like they should have or whatever. So they get into this like years long beef. So then Benzino talks about how Eminem has, and on a diss track, like how Eminem has like disrespected black women, disrespected black culture, and we still allow him a seat at the table. So this is what he's talking about in his diss record. And then, of course, you know, Eminem annihilates Benzino or whatever. So he gets on to Drink Champs. He's heavily intoxicated. He's talking about the fact that every year, you know, for the last 20 years, he's had to talk about Eminem in interviews, what it's done to his career. The fact that his daughter now feels like she has to be cool with Eminem because he's part of the culture and she doesn't feel like Benzino is. It was just a lot of things that he said. But at the end, he said that, you know, he doesn't have anything really against Eminem, but that he made the Source for black people. He made the Source for hip hop. He made the Source for the culture. And that's why he was gatekeeping so hard when it came to Eminem's music, because he really saw that as the downfall of keeping hip hop hip hop. And when he said that, I was like, that honestly makes a lot of sense. You know, they say that a drunk body speaks a sober mind. Like, these are his actual thoughts about the situation, but he's trying to be hard. He's trying to be cool. He's trying to put on or whatever. But when he got drunk like that, he was able to really express the reasons why he was so hard on Eminem back in the day and why he just kind of can't give up this feud now, because he feels as though the people deserve something that is completely our own. Now, I agree with that. I do agree with that. But at the same time, it's like music is music and some people just really feel it. There's a lot of people out here that are not black that really identify with hip hop, the hip hop culture, everything it represents. And I don't think that they're trying to appropriate it. I think they're trying to celebrate it. And hip hop has been around for 50 years. You know, they just celebrated the 50 year anniversary of hip hop. And so with it have been around for so long, it's only natural that people are going to really gravitate. People have really gravitated to hip hop. I am definitely one of those people. You know, I grew up, like I just said, in a suburban Christian household where the only time I heard hip hop was on the radio. And that's the hip hop that really crossed over into mainstream, right? That's just mainstream hip hop. And it was like, you know, the DMXs, the Biggies, the Tupacs. They spoke to me as a girl, as a young suburban girl, because it was just so real and it was so cool and it was so in, you know what I mean? And even though I didn't relate to what they were going through, it was just like, I just related to it being so real and authentic. So I can understand what he means as though, you know, the Source was a love letter to us. The Source was for us and he didn't want other people encroaching on that. I can understand that, Benzino, and I think he has a point there, but now it's really, really time to lay the sword down. Like, how long are you really going to go back and forth? The Source is dead and done. Eminem is still thriving. You know, you have a relationship to repair with your daughter. It's like, there's so many other bigger fish to fry that this beef really needs to come to an end. But, you know, I appreciate that. I also appreciate DJ Enough stepping in after the rant. You know, he let him get off what he wanted to get off. But after the rant, I did hear in the end of the clip him being like, "Clay, you're better than this. We're not going to let you just sit here and cry on the podcast. You know, if you have something to say, like, let's get it out. But let's not, you know, continue to emasculate this man on this podcast. So he did step in there at the end for anybody that was curious about why they, you know, let this continue on. All right. This has been the trending topics for this week. They were juicy, y'all. They were very meaty and juicy. So there's only five, but please stay tuned for our sports report with J-Rob. All right, T-Crew, let's get into my favorite part of the podcast, the deep dive. And as you know, last week we were on vacation. And then after that, it was just timed very well to have the President's Day holiday. So I've really been able to just catch up on my Netflix, relax, have a couple snacks here and there, and just like do my thing. So I know nobody asked for a status update, but that's my status update. That's my wellness check. You're welcome. No, I'm just kidding. So in the time of doing this, I was able to watch a few things on Netflix. I finally finished Griselda, which I did enjoy, but I feel like got kind of slow towards the end. Also, I still haven't got a chance to watch it, but I want to watch The Cocaine Godmother 2, because this is where they talk about the black people that she worked with in the like Griselda TV show version. They didn't talk about them. So I want to watch the second installation of Cocaine Godmother to get like more of the tea about that, of who was kind of running her business while she was in jail. Anywho, I watched this documentary and it was crazy. Like they said it was crazy in the trailer, but you know how Netflix is. They're like, everything is crazy. Everything is like twists and turns you won't expect. This was definitely a twist and turn that I would not expect. Now, I told you guys on the Instagram a couple days ago to hurry up and watch this movie so that we could talk about it. So there will be spoilers. So if you haven't seen it and you want to see it, it's called Lover, Stalker, Killer, and it is on Netflix. But I'm going to give you a few minutes to just click out of the podcast now because I'm about to spoil. So go ahead and click out. I'll give you about 2 more seconds. All right, you guys should be gone by now. So let's get into it for those that watched. This was so crazy, y'all. First thing and that I noticed in this whole situation, let me go from the beginning and shout out David Krupta for A, telling his story, telling the truth, even though it may have been embarrassing at times, but just really telling the entire story of everything that happened. Also, shout out to this man for moving to Nebraska to co-parent his kids. Come on. We don't have sound effects yet on the podcast, but let me tell you how it warms my heart as a woman to see a man that's like, I don't even live in this region, but in order to co-parent my kids, I will do whatever I need to do because it's temporary. I hate to go on another tangent, but I have to say it. When you have a situation where you break up with your spouse or your girlfriend or whoever, and they move to another place because that's where they have support to raise the kids. And you say to yourself, well, they're going to go, you know, I'll get them here or there. For him to get up, leave his life to continue to co-parent his children, we love to see it. We honestly love to see it. That sold me on David from the very like first 20 minutes of the show. I'm not even going to lie. I was like, whatever David's talking about, I fully believe it because that's some real man shit right there. I'm just saying, that's some real man stuff right there. All right. So he's one of the main players. So we got David. He was married to a lady, I believe named Amanda. And then that didn't work out. So that this is why he's in Nebraska. He's just like setting up why he's in Nebraska because that's where Amanda was from. And she's taking her kids back there to get help, you know, have her village or whatever to help raise her kids now that she's divorced from Dave. So from David. I think they call him Dave in the show too. Like David, Dave, little interchangeable there, nicknames. So basically, long story short, he gets into an online dating situation. And because he's really only in Nebraska to co-parent his children, he's like, listen, I'm going to co-parent my kids, but when they get grown, I might be leaving Nebraska. Like I'm not planning on really putting down roots and like staying in Nebraska. I have a little apartment. I got a job. But my main purpose for being here is to co-parent my children. I don't want anything serious or to really settle down here. So he meets a woman named Liz. She has kids also. She loves animals and dogs and whatever. She has a snake. She has all these cool animals. So they kick it off. They go to the bar. They go on a couple dates. But, you know, he's still on the websites. He's still on Tinder. He's still on Plenty of Fish because he just wants to keep it casual. So the little affair that Liz and Dave had kind of fizzled out. And Dave was working at his mechanic's job and he saw Carrie. Now, Carrie was, you know, very attractive. She was also interested in not really having anything serious. So her and Dave had about a 2-week fling. And then Carrie, all of a sudden, starts to want more out of the relationship with Dave. And he finds this to be very curious because he's like, we just kind of spoke about this and we were like, we both don't really want anything that serious. So then she flips out on him at work and she's like going off. She's like, you know, this is not what I want. Like, I'm gonna, like, you're ruining my life. Da, 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 da. And he's just like, okay. So he works close to where he lives. And at this time, he believes that Carrie is still over his apartment because she also works close to where he lives, right? So he goes home on lunch to try to sort the situation out. She has moved out all of her clothes, everything. Like, she's completely moved out of his space. And he's like, well, you know, I feel bad about the situation, but I had to be honest with her. Like, this is not what I didn't want anything serious. I thought she knew that. But, you know, if that's what she wants, I guess it's time for her to move on because I don't want that. And I was like, all right, well, you know, whatever. So then fast forward. We get to this part of the story where now this person that didn't want a relationship with Dave, that wanted a relationship with Dave, but didn't want anything casual, is now stalking his ex that he used to talk to that it fizzled out with, Liz. She's also stalking his ex-wife and really anybody who comes in contact with Dave. She's gone as far to cut clothing of Liz and set Liz's house on fire. So now people are fully believing that Carrie is crazy. And on top of that, Carrie has a history of mental illness that her mom talks about. But she's like, you know, she was in a good place and she would have never left her son because she really was very close to her son. And even if she wanted to get away from me and, you know, Nebraska and the situation, she would have never left her son. So her mom found this to be really curious when she was on Facebook, like, I'm fine, stop looking for me, et cetera, et cetera. Because nobody has really spoken to Carrie or had eyes on Carrie now for months. Okay. So now we're getting into the tea of it, right? Let's just boil it down to what it came down to. Liz orchestrated this entire thing. She burned her own house on fire with her animals inside. She cut up her own clothing. She did something terrible to Carrie. I believe she unalived Carrie. And she did all of this for Dave. Like, she wanted to be in this relationship with Dave. She was stalked. She loved him. She liked him. She tried to keep it cool on the surface, but, you know, she just really wanted to be with him and couldn't express it. Then she went on and stalked him as somebody else that she has killed to assume their personality and their phone number and everything that they have going on so that she could turn, you know, because their relationship. The crazy part is Liz sets her house on fire, right? Dave then rekindles his relationship with Liz because he feels so bad thinking that it's Carrie when it was Liz the whole time. Carrie is deceased, unfortunately. Carrie is gone. They're just using, Liz just used Carrie as a scapegoat to do all her craziness, but Carrie is gone. This was such a, I mean, for those that watched, and I hope you did watch because I just gave the whole thing away, but this was crazy. And this is why, you know, people are like sheepish to say, like, I met somebody online, because there are so many people on there that are just so cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, like, complete, like, you almost harmed your own kids. You took away their home. You had to then move in with a boyfriend, and that's how they caught her, because the boyfriend that she moved in with, he worked for the police department on the side in, like, cyber crimes and stuff. And when they tracked the IP address back to his house, he was like, Yeah, I have somebody who used the computer, my on again, off again girlfriend, Liz, and then they finally were able to put all the pieces together. She shot herself in the leg, too. Forgot to mention that. She shot herself in the leg to try to frame Carrie, who is deceased at this point. And she knows she's deceased because she killed her. Complete crap. Y'all gotta watch yourself online. Like, really watch yourself, you know? And it's so hard with stalking because he did call the police. He did make reports, but it just, until unfortunately, it got to the craziness of her setting the house on fire. Nobody knew, you know, what she was capable of. And stalking is just very hard to prove. So it's just like, until they actually do something to you, it's really hard for the police to build a case against a stalker because they're waiting in the shadows, they're harassing you, but they're using burner phones that are not traceable. And it's just so much that goes into trying to find somebody when they just don't want to be found and they haven't done anything like super tangible in the situation. So rest in peace to Carrie, and shout out to her mother for just not believing what was given to her and just looking deeper and deeper and deeper, because you know, Liz could have ended up killing Dave or his ex-wife or his kids, you know, had she been able to be off the leash any longer. So shout out to that mother who just did not believe that her child could do something like that and really believed her child and really ended up helping these other people that she didn't even know down the line by just clearing her own daughter's name. You know what I mean? I would love to know what you guys think about this because this was such a crazy case. I was like, I have to talk about it. It was so insane. So let me know what you guys think about that in the comments, and please stay tuned for our outro comments. All right, T-Crew, this is my least favorite part of the podcast where I have to say goodbye to you guys. I want to thank all of you for your views and your comments and your sharing of reels. This really helps to grow our community, so I really appreciate it. And as always, convict the cops that killed Breonna Taylor. We won't stop until she gets the justice that she rightly deserves. Have a beautiful day or night wherever you are, and I love you for listening. Bye!